good evening, listeners, and welcome along to another edition of Ireland Calling, broadcasting here out of the Planet FM studio in Auckland on a Wednesday night. Our delayed broadcast going out on Plains FM in Christchurch on Saturday night, Capity Coast Radio and Wellington Access Radio on Sunday night, Sunday evening, Sunday nights down there. Welcome along. You're listening to Ireland Calling, brought to you with the support of the Hugh Green Group. And greetings to people listening on planetaudio.org.nz around New Zealand and indeed around the world on this, the historic day in New Zealand, 125 years ago today. Women in New Zealand were allowed to get the vote. So it was about another 25 years before women in Ireland and the UK, I think, got the vote, I'm pretty sure. But we're going to play all female artists, Irish artists, on the programme tonight. And we've got a special guest who I'll introduce you to in a few minutes' time, the newly appointed ambassador, Irish ambassador to New Zealand, Peter Ryan. I had the pleasure to meet Peter and his wife and some of his family at the Auckland Irish Society on Friday night, and thought it'd be a nice opportunity to on the programme here and talk about his life and times before he came to New Zealand and his plans here as ambassador for New Zealand. So we speak to him in about 5 minutes' time. But first up tonight, first of all female Irish artists, we're going to have Sinead O'Connor and a lovely song here called The Singing Bird.
Song up in the blue.
Yes, the wonderful voice there of Sinead O'Connor, and she's the first of our many Irish female artists that we'll play on the programme tonight as we celebrate today the 125th anniversary of the day that women in New Zealand got the vote. And let's dedicate this programme to all the Irish women that have come down here and made New Zealand their home. And yesterday we farewelled a lovely woman who certainly was a pioneer here and reared a great family, Bridget Walsh, and we're going to play a song for her later on. But it's my pleasure now to introduce you to the newly appointed and the first Irish ambassador to New Zealand, Peter Ryan. Peter has just taken up residence in Wellington. The embassy was opened last month, and he's joining us tonight from Wellington, and we'll have a chat to him about his life and times before he came to New Zealand and what his plans for here in New Zealand for the coming years. Peter, you're very welcome to Ireland Calling.
Thanks, Oliver. Guru Margot. It's great to have a chance to join your programme and to touch base with you and your listeners.
Well, we enjoyed people in the Irish Society in Auckland on Friday night meeting you and your wife and two of your children, and it was great to hear you talk about your plans for New Zealand, and you paid tribute to all the people that have come here in the past, the Irish people that have certainly been pioneers. But for those people who weren't there, a bit of a background. Tell us a small bit about yourself, Peter, and where you grew up, and when did you get involved in foreign affairs?
Sure, yeah. I was born in Dublin. My wife, Teresa, was also born in Dublin, and we have three daughters, Shauna, Gira, and Aoife. Teresa and I have been on the road with the foreign affairs in Japan. We served in Japan and Korea, in Singapore, in New York, and in Hong Kong. Prior to going on the road, if you like, on postings, I was working with an organisation in the government department called the International Fund for Ireland, and they were trying to build community community projects and reconciliation projects across the border in Ireland and also within the community in the north of Ireland. So that was a very special project to start out life as an Irish diplomat, and to have an opportunity to work on that was very special.
So this is your first appointment as a full ambassador, and obviously you're the first Irish ambassador to New Zealand. What a great honour that is.
Absolutely. Privileged to have that opportunity, and a point that I made, and you touched on it there in your introduction, a point I made to where I met Dame Patsy Reddy and presented credentials at the end of August, just a couple of weeks ago now. The point that I made to her was that I was very, very cognizant of the fact that I was representing generations of Irish people, if you like, who'd come here long before I was born, and I was very, very humbled by the chance to present credentials on behalf of the government and people of Ireland to her, and to bring that friendly message, obviously, from Ireland. And she responded, I must say, very, very beautifully to that, and indeed spoke about her own ancestors who came from Kentigleesh in Ireland. So that was a very special moment, and I'm very conscious of the privilege that I have as being the first, but also, I suppose, the opportunity that gives to really build on what's gone here before, and to see what we can do to ensure that very special connection remains as strong as it is today.
And of course, you're following a long list of Irish people that made their mark here in New Zealand, including William Hobson, who signed the Treaty of Waitangi. But today we celebrate the 125th anniversary of women in New Zealand getting the vote, and of course that came about by the work of another great Irishman, John Ballance, who was a former Prime Minister of New Zealand.
Sure, and the Ballance House actually in Glenavy is served by the Ulster New Zealand Trust, and I'm delighted to say that that's actually open to the public, and quite a few visitors come there and hear about Ballance's life, of course, before he left the Irish shores, but also about his life in New Zealand. So I mean, it is a very special thing to be in New Zealand as they mark the 125th anniversary, very special anniversary, and they marked it, I thought, really well today in lots of interesting ways, including my favourite being the icon of Katie Shepherd on the traffic lights beside the Beehive in Wellington. But also, of course, we have this is a special year for Ireland in terms of our anniversaries, and we're marking also the election of Constance Markovich, who was, you know, an outstanding Irish suffragette and a revolutionary and a leader also. And she was indeed elected as the first female member of the House of Commons in 1918, as you know. And she was elected on an abstentionist policy, so she didn't take her seat. But she took her seat the following year in Dáil Éireann in 1919. So there is a very special impact that the New Zealand women had across the world, and that's certainly another dimension that we will be celebrating. And we've had lots of great women, as you know, here, and I think it's one of the features of New Zealand life that struck me anyway, that so many things in New Zealand, whether it's cities or whether it's places, are named after Irish men, but we don't seem to have the same sort of profile given to the contribution of Irish women. And I would very much agree with you that Irish women have made a huge contribution to the development of New Zealand, and it would be nice going forward if we could start looking at ways in which we can honour that, celebrate that, and have that as a living legacy, if you like, for future generations of Kiwis of Irish heritage.
And of course, here in Auckland, we have the honorary consul and assistant consul to outstanding women in Niamh McMahon and Denise Flanagan.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we've been blessed with the honorary consulate, the operation that we have, to all intents and purposes. They've just been doing an extraordinary job. And indeed, Niamh's predecessors did an extraordinary job, and they can be very proud of that. That's, as you know, is a volunteer-led effort. So it's really extraordinary what they've done and the impact that they've had and the way in which they've connected with the Irish and Kiwis of Irish heritage also across. I'm mindful, you know, of my very first school visit in Auckland. I mentioned it, Oliver, maybe the other evening. It was the St. Patrick's School, and visiting St. Patrick's School, a place that was established by seven Irish Sisters of Charity who came all the way to New Zealand, is a reminder to us again when we're talking about powerful women and inspirational women and women leaders and women who just have contributed so much both in Ireland and here. And it was a real privilege for me, I have to say, to start out my program in Auckland, walking in their footsteps of St. Patrick's Church and then into St. Patrick's School. It was very special.
So for people listening tonight now and they're wondering what does the job of an ambassador entail, give us a brief description of what your job entails and what you'll be doing here.
Well, I suppose first and foremost is that typically no day is the same, and that's one of the great attractions of the job, that the thing would be very fast moving, that there'd be a whole range of things coming across our desk. So I'd like to summarise it just under a couple of headings, if I may. The first one is, of course, to make sure that our political relations with New Zealand remain strong, remain vibrant, and remain on the global stage. So we work very closely with New Zealand at the United Nations. We are working very closely, as you know, with the EU-New Zealand Free Trade Agreement, and we want to make sure that those relations are at the highest possible level and that we're as close as we possibly can be. In terms of the community, we want to try to see what we can do to enhance all the brilliant work of the groups that's taking place already right across the two islands in New Zealand. We want to see if we can build on that and hopefully try and encourage more collaboration between groups and see what we can do to encourage more connections with back home to make sure that those groups are still vibrant, as vibrant today as they are in another 50 years, Oliver. That's very important. I think commerce and trade is obviously an important element of it. We do a lot of business with New Zealand already. We do, you know, in the region of 300 plus million euro worth of business annually, and I think Ireland is becoming increasingly attractive for New Zealand firms and New Zealand professionals. We'd like lots more of them to come to Ireland to look at Ireland as a gateway into the European Union, and we'd like to encourage Irish companies to think about New Zealand as a market, both in its own right and also for the wider Pacific area. And then the last area, which I think cross-cuts all of those, is around our cultural footprint here. It's really important to us that we do what we can to encourage the next generation to access Irish culture, to introduce new people to Irish culture and to our wonderful musicians and dancers and writers and so on, and sports people, and that's very important to us that we do that. And I think we're ploughing a fertile furrow in New Zealand in that regard. And I was delighted actually on my way home from the office this evening to see the posters for the New Zealand Irish Fest, which Jerry Paul is pulling together in the week of the 10th of November. I mean, that's just, we're behind that all the way, and we're really looking forward to a great week. I mean, it's extraordinary ambition, 60 events, 4 days across 3 cities. I'm going to see how many of those I can get to myself personally. But I would also would encourage people to come and dip into those events if they can. There's something there for everybody, whether it's sports or comedy or music or dance. There's something there for everybody. I hope people can be part of that. So
yes, well, we talked to Jerry about that last week, and we're promoting it. So in terms of the team you head up, is there a big team in your office in Wellington when you get it up and running, or are you a one-man band at this stage?
No, I think one of the features for us is that we don't act alone, and we take a very collaborative approach. That's my own personal approach as well. So I'm working hand in glove with the Honorary Consulate in Auckland, which continues to lead the way for us here in New Zealand. I have a colleague here with me at the moment from our headquarters, Owen Walsh, who's doing a fantastic job in setting up our operations on the ground. And over the coming months, we'll be recruiting people, and then we'll have some colleagues, additional colleagues coming from Ireland. So no, we won't be alone here. And I think a small lean machine here is what we need, and we will certainly be as collaborative as we can in terms of improving what we're able to do. Even though our numbers will be small, our reach will be wide, and that's in part due to all the great work of the Irish groups and Irish people over such a long time here.
Well, the two countries are very similar, Ireland and New Zealand, similar population and similar climates, although the weather might be a bit warmer down here, but we had a good Irish summer. Of course, strong connections on the agricultural links between the two countries. It's a big week in Ireland this week with the National Ploughing Championships, which is very similar to our field days, which happen here. And I think there's a number of New Zealand companies exhibiting over there. So the agriculture links, both machinery and dairying and research and development, that's a big area that we have a lot of common between Ireland and New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the New Zealand is always out in force at the Ploughing Championships, and there's a special feature this year of it, which I'd be really interested to see if how many of the New Zealanders get a chance to enjoy it in that. They have created a mock-up of the ambassador's office in Wellington.
All right.
At the Ploughing Championships, and there's a fantastic photo of Wellington Harbour behind my imagined desk, and photographs of the credential ceremony on the notice board and so on. So I think New Zealand is always really front and centre at the Ploughing Championships. You know that Ireland has a significant presence annually for the last 12 years here at the field days, at the main field days. I'm looking forward to being involved in that. I think there's a lot more that we can do here to encourage more collaboration and more joint research between Chagosk and the New Zealand equivalents here. So we're really delighted how that's going. I think the other areas that have occurred to me over the last few weeks being here and taking a look at it has certainly been around the technology space. Ireland is now, as you might have seen, the Taoiseach said yesterday, we're well on the way to being Europe's leading technology centre. That's quite extraordinary considering where we've come from and so on. So we have quite a few Irish technology companies who are already doing business in New Zealand, and we have some Kiwi technology companies who are doing business in Ireland and are using Ireland as their springboard into the European Union. Bear in mind, you've got a market of 600 million people there. It's the largest, most lucrative market in the world. So we would really be encouraging young startup companies in New Zealand and young professionals to come and take a look at Ireland. It's possible to raise money there. We have a lot of very active VCs there. And in fact, the Irish government is the largest early stage investor in the European Union. So we are very supportive of startup projects, particularly in the technology space, and I think that's a real area of opportunity for us. I can feel it, I felt it in Auckland, I can feel it in Wellington, but this is an area that New Zealand is concentrating.
Of course, 10 years ago, Ireland was hit very badly with the global financial crisis. But as you said there, growth is good. I suppose the only issue is with the people moving to Ireland, they all want to move to the big cities. And it would be great to get people to move to some of the rural areas, you know, because there's a big need for jobs there. But the political climate in Ireland at the moment, obviously we have a government that's supported by Fianna Fáil for a budget that's due next month, and obviously the big issue going forward is Brexit. So the most important thing is that we keep a good, strong government over the next few months. We spoke to Fintan O'Toole here 2 weeks ago, and he thinks that maybe in the middle of next year, Fianna Fáil might decide to pull their support. But from your point of view, so important, isn't it, over these next crucial months as we deal with the fallout from Brexit, which will take place early next year?
Yeah, I listened to the podcast of your interview with Fintan. Well done.
Thanks.
It's great to have Fintan on. I met him a few times in New York. He's absolutely brilliant. And he has a lovely way of explaining things that are absolutely complicated and putting them in, making them seem very straightforward, which is a great attribute. I think there's a couple of things. First of all, on your point about encouraging people to come out of the big urban centres in Ireland, I think that's something that everybody recognises in Ireland. With unemployment having fallen to around 5% where it is now, and with the pressure that is placed on the housing on the housing stock that's there and so on, the more people that we can get outside of Dublin, Cork and Galway and Sligo and so on, the better. And I think this is something that we're seeing it begin to grow the level of investment that's going into places outside of Dublin. I think that's very important, and I think it makes a lot of sense. And we're seeing it, for example, in the tourism sector as well, very heavy in tourism investment. As you know, the largest investment ever in Ireland by a tourism project is actually in Longford now. So there's a lot of interesting investments coming in and taking place, and one of the key points about that is that our infrastructural improvement that's taken place over the we still have a bit of the way to go, but we have a marvellous road infrastructure now, as you know, in Ireland, and that really can be brought to bear in terms of where people decide to locate themselves. And in fact, some of the Kiwis I met, quite a few of the Kiwis I met, aren't based in Dublin at all. They're out around the country, and I think that's a very important prospect for the future. Certainly around the government stability is always a good thing. I think we've enjoyed quite a period of stability in the last number of years in Ireland, and that has certainly been reflected in the economic growth. We're going to be the third fastest growing economy in the European Union again, the fastest for the third successive year. But having said that, Oliver, you know and I know there are still pockets of Ireland and Irish society that haven't benefited to the extent that we would all like them to benefit from the economic recovery. So we've quite a bit of way to go, and I think you'll find that people in Ireland aren't patting themselves on the back. You know, we had a really, really tough global financial crisis in Ireland. We had a really strong recovery from it, but for that recovery to be sustainable, and if that is sustainable, that we will really reach all the sectors of society who suffered, and some of whom continue to suffer. But I think the bottom line is we've more people in work now than we've ever had on record in Ireland. We have higher exports than we've ever had on record. And we have a phenomenal amount of investment, as you know, going into Ireland, particularly from US, but not only from US, but also from some British financial companies and from European, and indeed from this part of the world as well. So I think we're in a good place around it.
And as you mentioned the other night, obviously Ireland is now the only English-speaking country within the European Union. So going forward, this creates opportunities for places like New Zealand that want to get a foothold into the European Union and that huge market. And obviously that's something that you and indeed Enterprise Ireland and all the other agencies that promote Ireland overseas will be working on in the years to come.
I think so. Just letting people know here about the opportunities that are there and being able to show them some case studies of where people have successfully located out of Ireland. I think they speak pretty good English in Malta also, and I think there's excellent English in Sweden and the Netherlands and all the rest, but I think that's certainly one of the opportunities around the post-Brexit reality that there's going to be. But I think the main one is that is around this mix of features that Ireland has. I mean, we have an extraordinarily young population, 40% under the age of 25. We have an extraordinarily diverse population now. One-fifth of all people born, all residents of Dublin, have been born overseas, which is quite extraordinary. We have a very high level of education, as you know. Probably over 60% of our school leaving cohort over the last decade have a third level degree. So we've invested a lot in things like education. We have a world class education sector, and I think this is a great attribute to offer to investors and to business partners. And I think a lot of the old style investment of people going and opening a factory, that's changing, as you well know. I mean, we're looking at people like Facebook, who are now up to almost 7,000 employees in Dublin. And then we're looking at, you know, the med tech sector in Galway, the technology startup center in Galway, which is absolutely world class. This is an absolutely world leading center. So I think it makes sense, from my point of view, for at least the Kiwis to be informed about that and to be aware of it. And even if they do decide to locate their main operations in another part of Europe, certainly to be aware of the opportunities that there are in somewhere like Ireland, that you have young people, you have smart people. And I think one of the most important things, and I'm sure you hear it from your listeners and from other friends, and I certainly hear it from a lot of people, even since coming to New Zealand, is how welcoming Ireland is. You know, Ireland has thrown its arms open to this diverse workforce that has come from all over the world, really, to Ireland. And I think that's been a great thing. It's been a very positive thing. And I think of my own university campus and in University College Dublin, and the change that's taken place there and the diversity that's there since I left, which is quite a while ago. I think that's a really positive thing for young Irish people to have that exposure to other cultures, other nationalities, and another view of the world. And that can only be a good thing. So I'd encourage more Kiwis as well to think of Ireland as a location to go to study, as a location to go to do some postgrad, to do some research, because obviously we're part of the EU research programs. And I think it's a very exciting time, actually, for a lot of sectors between Ireland and New Zealand.
Well, before we finish, we have to talk about the sporting links. And, of course, Ireland have only beaten the All Blacks once, and that was on foreign ground over in Soldiers Field in Chicago. They play each other again later this year. So as the newly appointed ambassador, will you have an official duty? Will you be called back for important meetings in November to Dublin, Peter?
I wish. I'll be here watching the game with the community here in Wellington. I'm looking forward to it. I watched the Chicago game in Hong Kong, where I was at the time, and I think anybody who loves their sport, and I think the Irish love the sport, and certainly the New Zealanders love the sport, the best that we can hope for is a real battle. And certainly, I know there isn't any serious silverware on offer for the day in question, but certainly as a precursor to what we can expect next year with the World Cup in Japan. It's an exciting prospect, and it's great to have the All Blacks coming to Dublin. That's a very special occasion. It's wonderful that the week prior to the All Blacks game in Lands End Road, New Zealand will formally open its new embassy in Dublin. The New Zealand government has just announced earlier today that its ambassador designate will be Brad Burgess. So we're very excited about that. We're very excited that the New Zealand-Ireland links will go to a new level. And, you know, one of the great things about Ireland and New Zealand is that we're competitive on the pitch. We're pals off the pitch. We don't have issues with one another. We get on great. And I've heard so many Kiwis telling me that they didn't mind too much losing to Ireland, of all people, in Chicago. They could accept it in as far as they can accept any defeat. They accepted it with a little bit more grace because it was Ireland. And that was a very special thing to hear. And I look forward to the day when we can get a New Zealand Gaelic team to play on the other side of the city in Croke Park. Hopefully that day is not too far away either.
Well, people were delighted to meet you the other night, and you gave a great speech. And, you know, even some of the car players looked up, you know, when playing the game. But everybody stopped whatever they were doing the other night when your daughter was introduced and got up and performed at the Irish Society. So, Ciara, where did you get the music from? Because she is a star in the making, if not already a star, and she's only 7 or nearly 8. Is that right?
Well, you're very good. Aoife is my 7-year-old, and she was there in all her glory.
Oh, Aoife, sorry. Yeah.
Ciara is my 15-year-old, and the brilliant Ciara Walsh, who danced there, is the granddaughter of none other than Rodney Walsh, our esteemed former honorary consul. And I think she came 5th in the World Championships.
That's right.
And is an absolute superstar, and how great was she to come out. It's daunting enough. I mean, she was the only dancer there to stand up there, and that was quite a welcome. That was very special for myself and my family to be welcomed by a second generation Kiwi who's able to dance better than we can. That's wonderful.
Well, congratulations, Peter, on your appointment, yeah. And a very special welcome to Teresa and to Sienna, Ciara and yourself, and Aoife and yourself. And we hope that you enjoy many years here. How long is the appointment for? It's as long as a piece of string, is it?
I hope I'm going to be here forever, and I can tell you that just after a short while. But can I just say, in joining you in passing on condolences to Bridget Walsh and to the family of the late Bridget Walsh, and just to thank you, Oliver, for what you do to keep our community in touch with what's going on back home and what has an Irish flavour here in New Zealand, and also to say that, look, we're happy to keep in touch with you guys, and anything that we can do to help your work and to keep that going, and long may it continue. And thanks for you and for your team also, for all your help.
Thank you very much, Peter. I'll talk to you off air. And as I mentioned at the start of the programme tonight, all our artists tonight are famous Irish female singers. And up next is this beautiful song, Song for Ireland. And I want to dedicate this to the memory of Bridget Walsh, who was laid to rest yesterday. Mary Black and Song for Ireland.
Silver wing, they fly. They know freedom in their breasts. Saw black hair against the sky, with twisted rocks that run down to the sea. With true friends who try to make you stay, telling jokes and news and singing songs to pass the night away. Watch the Galway sun. Sun, ah,
Oh yes, well believe it or not, that was the first song that I played when I started Ireland Calling, and that's a few years ago now, in August 1990. And before that, great to speak to Peter Ryan, who's recently been appointed Ireland's first ambassador to New Zealand, based in Wellington. But as he said, he'll be travelling around the country and no doubt meeting Irish groups right throughout the length and breadth of New Zealand during his time here. And one of the events that he said he'll be attending is the New Zealand Irish Festival. And that's running in November. We had a chat to Jerry Paul about it last week. It runs from the 15th to the 18th of November, with events happening in the three major centres in Wellington, Auckland and Christchurch. And you can get details on all the events that are running on the website www.nzirishfest.co.nz. But some of the highlights include Damien Dempsey, well-known Irish singer, Mick Flannery and Lisa O'Neill, comedians Alan McElroy and Darren Jardine, and there's an Irish Film Festival, and of course this leads up to the weekend that Ireland played the All Blacks in Dublin. So plenty of events happening around, and as Ambassador Ryan said there, Jerry's put a lot of effort into this, so it's important that we go out and support the festival that he's organising. And you know, well done to Jerry, and we look forward to promoting that over the coming weeks. That's happening in November, but in early October, in fact from the 4th to the 6th of October, we've got the Traditional Irish Dancing Association of New Zealand are running the national championships, and this year they're taking place in Auckland at the Dorothy Winston Theatre, Auckland Girls Grammar School, which is in Freeman's Bay. So it runs on the 4th, 5th and 6th, and there will be many competitors dancing solo and teams, and even if you haven't got anybody dancing, it'll be great then there to watch and see the beautiful costumes. Many people will be unveiling new dancing dresses for the first time, and there'll be brilliant dancing, and New Zealand certainly is producing very good quality Irish dancers. As Ambassador Ryan said there, Ciara Walsh danced last Friday night at the Irish Society, and she danced in the World Championships last year and came fifth. And no doubt she'll be dancing along with dancers from Auckland, Wellington, Hamilton and Christchurch dancing schools. So it's on from the 4th to the 6th of October. It's at the Dorothy Winston Theatre, Auckland Girls Grammar School, Freeman's Bay, and that's in Auckland. And admission isn't that expensive, $15 for an adult for the whole day, or you can get a $40 weekend pass. And for senior citizens and students, it's $12. And if you're under 12, it's $5. Under 5, it's free. So there you go, the Traditional Irish Dancing Championships. And I've attended them on a number of occasions. My daughter Sinead did a lot of dancing. And she obviously went to Christchurch. They held great events down there and here in Auckland. So get out and support it. As I mentioned earlier, we had a great night at the Irish Society the other night. And well done to Bridie and her team for putting on a big Cade Meal of Fortune for the ambassador, and indeed his wife and his two children that were there. And Bridie and the band played some music, and there was some other guest artists there as well. So well done to everybody. And of course, there was cards there, and you can do it all again tomorrow night. And this Friday night, there's an open mic night, and the kitchen will be open from 6, and there's cards taking place. So make sure you can go along. And then the following Sunday, I think you need to book for this, you do, because there'll be limited spaces. The Club Sunday Roasts are back, $20 for adults, 5 to 15 years, $10, and under 5s are free. So make sure you book by contacting the Auckland Irish Society. We'll take another bit of music, and then I'll come back and run through some of the headlines that are making the news in Ireland today. And today would have been the birthday of the late Big Tom, who passed away in April this year. And as I said, we're playing all female artists tonight in the programme, but this was a song that became a big hit and put this woman on the road. It's Susan McCann singing all about Big Tom is still the king. Big Tom is still the king.
lipstick's taught me cry. Oh, Nashville is so far away, it's thirsty being to play. But when you're in old Ireland, Dick Tall is still the king.
Yes, indeed, Big Tom is still the king, and today I think would have been Big Tom's 82nd birthday. And of course, Big Tom passed away in April this year, and in January his wife Rose passed away, and of course, huge turnout for his funeral. Well, today, and bringing the headlines from Ireland, Ireland are going to have six candidates running for the presidential election on October the 26th, because yesterday, businessman Peter Casey, he's become the third panellist from the Dragon's Den TV show to make it onto the ballot paper. So confirmed to run in the election are President Michael D. Higgins, the incumbent, and obviously odds on favour to retain his position. Sinn Féin MEP Lee Ní Riaidhe, she's the daughter of former Seana Riaidhe, former famous Irish musician, and she's representing Sinn Féin. She was put forward at the weekend. Pieta House founder Senator Joan Freeman, and then Sean Gallagher, who came second in the last election, and Gavin Duffy. So there'll be six people on the ballot at this stage. So the 26th of October, so the referendum, or the printers will be busy over the next few days getting the posters ready. Michael D. Higgins, yesterday he officially signed the forms to repeal the Eighth Amendment. This is, of course, now allowing for abortion to take place in Ireland up to 12 weeks. And Michael D. Higgins, he was down at the Ploughing Championships yesterday in Scraggan Moor, and he certainly cut the tape to open the Ploughing Championships, but a very good article in one of the papers today where he was cutting the tape to start his campaign. Of course, very difficult when you're the President of Ireland, you know, technically speaking, you're given a role, all your speeches and everything, you write them yourself, but you can't say anything controversial. It's you're basically head of state. But when the election campaign gets underway, he'll be thrown off the shackles of the presidency, and he'll be able to allow to debate with all the other contenders. And I'm sure there'll be a few TV debates and radio debates. And of course, the election takes place on the 26th of October, and the inauguration takes place on the 11th of November. And of course, I mentioned last week that Donald Trump had planned to come to visit Ireland, but he's put that off, and will probably come sometime next year. I think somebody must have told him it's a bit chilly down around Doonbeg and Clare in the middle of November, because no doubt he had planned to come and visit his state-of-the-art new golf resort down there in Doonbeg. Weather not great. In fact, there was four seasons in one day at the Ploughing Championships yesterday, and they certainly might have got a fifth season overnight and this morning, because there's very high winds, and they've delayed the opening of the event today till after 11 a.m. and it'll close an hour later. And they're expecting 300,000 people through the gates over the 3 days of the show, and it's the biggest agricultural show in the Northern Hemisphere. So it's obviously one of the big events, and hopefully the weather will stay reasonable over the next 2 days. And of course, as well as the events and promoting of trade, and agriculture machinery. Every big organisation is there, and a bit of ploughing does take place as well. It's called the National Ploughing Championships, but of course most people go there to look at the exhibits, and RTE, the national broadcaster, indeed other radio stations are all broadcasting. And speaking of radio, you're listening to Ireland Calling, brought to the Hugh Green Group. So wherever listeners tonight, hope you've enjoyed the programme, and we'll continue on with some more Irish music from the Irish female artist that I've picked on tonight to play on the programme here. So let's look around here, and we see we've got we'll take the song Sunny, one of my favourite songs. Great voice there of Mary Black, And who else was playing there? Dolores Keane and Emmylou Harris, and a lovely song called Sunny. And if you've tuned in, you're listening to Ireland Calling. You've almost missed most, well, you missed most of the programme. You've got about 5 minutes left. And the programme brought to you each week with the support of the Hugh Green Group. So wherever you're listening tonight, whether it's here in New Zealand or offshore, I hope you're enjoying the programme. I just want to play a special request today for a song by The Cars. So I better not go tonight without playing a song by The Cars. So here's The Cars singing Peggy Gordon. And this is you, David Harvey.
Peggy Gordon, you are my darling. Come sit you down upon my knee and tell to me the very reason. So in love that I can't deny it. My heart lies smothered in my breast, but it's not for you to let the world know it. A troubled mind. I put my head to a glass of brandy. It was my fancy, I do declare. For when I'm drinking, I'm always thinking.
Yes, that's The Cars there, and their version of Peggy Gordon, almost bringing us to the end of another edition of Ireland Calling. And seeing as we're celebrating the suffragette movement and the celebration that New Zealand women got the vote 100 years ago today, it's only important we let you know that Dublin won the All-Ireland Ladies Senior Football Championship last weekend by beating Cork, and winning back-to-back titles. And of course, they will. There was over 55,000 people at Croke Park last week. I'm going to leave you tonight with our final piece of music for the night. Another lovely bit of music called Marble Halls by Enya. And I just want to thank the Hugh Green Group for their continued support. thank you for tuning in tonight, and hopefully you'll be back next week. And again, thanks to Ambassador Peter Ryan for joining us on the programme tonight. For me, Oliver Lee, I'll say good night, goodbye, and God bless, and leave you with Inya.